talking about him going around Seba.
Yeah. So when we turn the tape, is this going in the right direction? Yes, it is.
You were talking about your grandpa.
He was explaining to me that he thinks he was around five, maybe four or five.
Yeah.
And they were preparing, he said. He didn't know what they were doing, but they were spending a lot of time making these weavings. But they were basically pretty simple weavings. And he said, lo and behold, he found out later, because he was brought with them to the longhouse. I don't know how much later, whether it was months or a year. And there was a big gathering, and there was a big celebration. They were having a naming ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't realize then that it was his own naming ceremony.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So they had been preparing for this time.
Uh-huh.
And I guess it would be, he said he was coming to his senses, so it would be that they thought it was time for him to get his Indian name.
Mm-hmm.
So he got it. And and that's what they're doing. So I said, oh, you are so lucky that you got to see it, but I'm so happy that I have you.
Mm-hmm.
To tell me the story. I said, Grandpa, you know, you could have gone a long time ago, but you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm able to hear the story from you. And it really connects what we're doing and verifies what we're doing. That's what it does.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm really happy that you're doing that. He said, I know I haven't said anything to you, but I am really happy for you and your sisters, you know. And as the years went by, everything I made, I brought to him and showed it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we made for the Vancouver International Airport, I think really was the success of all successes, because I said to myself, at one point, years before that, I had said that, you know, this work that I was doing, if ever I could repay or interpret for our people and have the wrongs that were done for them righted, and if there was a way that we could justify for them everything that was ever done wrong, and if I could be a part of that, then I would like to. So when we did the International Airport, and those 16-foot weavings are there, I felt justified for them.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that they would hang there and that they had a message. And it said, we are here, we have always been here, we are an intelligent, functioning society who welcomed you and are welcoming you again because of the kind of people that we are, that we keep on welcoming after everything that's been done, that we stand for what we believe in, we stand on our successes, and this visually reflects our history.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was done, I didn't care if I ever made another weaving. If I stopped that time, I would never feel unjustified. So when I brought it to my grandfather,
Anna?
Excuse me, I'm busy.
Hold your card right here.
So when I brought the weaving to my grandfather before I went to the airport, I unrolled it in his living room. It's 16 feet long.
Wow.
And he stood up and he walked up. He had his cane, and I think he must have been maybe 90 by then.
Mm-hmm.
Still healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he used his little cane just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked up and he walked down, and he was always very quiet. He was a man of a few words, but when he said them, you know, they were strong. And he said, you girls never cease to amaze me now. He said, and I think you're crazy. He said, because you'll never get paid for your work. And I said, Grandpa, my payment is you. I said, watching you, knowing where your people have come from, I said, that's my reward. I don't have to have the money. He said, well, I still think you're crazy. So he went and sat on the couch, and I said, could I just wrap this around behind you? I know it's big and it's large, but maybe I could just put it behind you, and I draped it over his shoulders.
Oh.
And he said, oh, this is something. And I said, can I take your picture? And he said, yeah, okay. And he usually was quite shy. And he always wore this cap that you could never get him to take off. And so I took the picture, and he goes, wait a minute, hold it. He reaches kind of down, and he pulls his cap off. And then he takes his glasses off. Huh. And he sat there, proud as anything. And his nickname was King Edward. We called him that because he was so old. And we thought, you know, he's king of the family.
Sure.
So his name was King Edward. And I said, if ever you were a king, you're a king today, Edward. He was so proud.
Oh, he'd be so pleased, wouldn't he?
He was so proud.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we took the weaving out to the airport. And that's what I like to do with whichever piece I made. It has to have a life.
Sure.
It has to be connected. Mm-hmm. And that weaving, you know, he wore it, and he walked up and down beside it, and it hangs there now, reflective of him and of his people. So
that's a marvelous story. And so there's people from all over the world walk by that, and they don't know that it was on your grandfather's shoulders, but you know that.
Oh, yeah.
And
he
knew that. This is very nice.
So he lived to be, like I said, 99 and almost 100. And, you know, when he passed on, one of my girlfriends said, well, I'll be there for you because I know it's going to be really hard on you. And I said, you know what? I have an understanding about life. And my understanding about life has become so connected through my work. And the spirit of my work connects me to another world, a world in which I think my ancestors live. And when my grandfather's ready to go there, I can let him go. I don't have to hold on to him and hold on to my own fears. I can look at faith and I can let him go in faith to where he needs to go. And when I need him again, I will call on him. And he'll be there for me. And so will my ancestors. So I don't have a hard time letting go of people when they are ready to leave this world and go to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that's the understanding I have about death, that it's a celebration. And, you know, when the priest stands up there and says, we celebrate, and everybody falls apart, I think in their own life, their own life is falling apart. Yeah. Because really, celebration is for us living people. Mm-hmm. It's not for the dead because they're gone.
Yeah,
and it's us who goes through this ritual and celebration or ritual of the procession of death, and we become very fearful of it. My sister said the other day that she thinks Jewish people have it right because they do it within a day, within 24 hours, it's all done, and I think it should be done that way. Because I think as humans we're very selfish and we cling on to these memories or to this person who isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and my grandfather and I had this little joke between one another. We would take long drives along the beach out here.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Spanish Banks.
Spanish Banks. Yeah.
And along Jericho, and he would show me all the places where our people lived.
Mm.
And we would talk about our history. He would show me name places, and he talked about Jericho and that it was a graveyard at one time, right under Jericho School.
Oh.
And I said, wow, Grandpa, well, why would the graveyard be so far away from the community? He said, that's exactly why. Why would we want a graveyard in our community?
Oh.
So it was a burial place where you would go way away from your community. You wouldn't have it right beside there. And I said, oh, that only makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, he used to tell me, you know, all these name places and wherever they were. And he told me, he said, I have to tell you all these things and I want you to remember all of this when I'm gone, because if you don't know who you are, you're nothing.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Yeah, and so I actually did a little story about him in Hurricane in the Basement, Millennium Stories.
Oh, yeah.
And
indeed, I saw it.
Yeah, did you see it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that story was inspired by him. It was by the time that I spent with him, and that's what weaving's about. It's about the history, it's about the connection of our people through time. Mm-hmm. It's the pride, the integrity, and the success of our people. And it's slow because of all the women who have been involved with the weaving. There's probably only a handful of us that are still
doing it,
continuing it. And we have integrated out into the community doing school programming. I do lectures at university levels. I do lectures at elementary levels. So it just depends on who I'm talking to. Uh-huh. And in May, I go to Paris to talk about my work.
Oh, great.
And, you know, it's I think it's a seed that's been planted, and we have nurtured it, and it's growing, you know.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Do you want to take a breather for a sec?
Sure.
Well, thank you for those wonderful stories about your grandfather, and for showing me the story in the Hurricane in the Basement book. I wonder if you would like to tell some stories about growing up here on Musqueam with your mother and father. And I will mention that I know your mother, and she has told me that her own background is Scottish and Norwegian, and you, I think, mentioned it when we first started talking, and so that you have spent a lot of time searching for the background and spiritual life of your Musqueam people. What would you like to talk about? What effect it would have to be brought up with this another side of heritage from another culture, and if you know how that affected you and your family, your mother.
Meaning my mother was Scottish and Norwegian?
Yeah.
Well, I don't. I think that my mother is a strong person. Mm-hmm. And I think that we get a lot of our personality from her, but I think she's very equal to my father. Mm-hmm. I know that she's not always sure of herself. And I think that came from maybe where she was in her own family.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, we didn't get to know our Scottish Norwegian grandparents as closely as we did the ones here, but we visited them in their homes in Surrey, mm-hmm. in what they call Sunbury now.
Oh, yeah.
And along River Road.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And we used to go and spend, you know, time with them periodically. Mm-hmm. And it really was interesting, I think, because it was like going into a different world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just felt different. I don't know how much different it was, but it felt different when we left here and went there and stayed with them. And two or three of us at a time, because Mom had 10 of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when we went to school, our mom always prepared us to, you know, do our best to, she always had our shoes polished for us and our clothes ready for us. And as we got older, we prepared our own clothes, mm-hmm. and she taught us that. And I did notice when I was growing up that a lot of kids didn't have as much as we did. But it wasn't that we had more, but we looked after what we had. That's what it was. I realized that later.
Uh-huh.
When I think of it, you know, now as an adult, we were just as poor as anybody else. And that's why, as a First Nations person today, when you look at the social injustices of our people, if that's what they are, I always say to my sister, why is it that when a person thinks they're poor, they have to be dirty or not look after themselves? And I mean that across the board of any place.
Anybody. Mm-hmm.
So it must be that you have a low self-esteem, you don't care. But I know that we didn't have much either, but we looked after what we had.
Mm-hmm.
We had a table and chairs that lasted through most of our little lives and adult lives. We had probably the same furniture, but my mom looked after everything, and everything was put away. But if I went to one of my friends' homes and it looked like they had nothing, and they always made us feel bad for having whatever little we had.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, we were always categorized as the rich kids in the community. Because, and I think back now, it's because my mom looked after everything very well. She was taught that.
Well, it must have been a challenge to like for your dad to earn enough to feed and clothe that many kids.
Well, he was a fisherman.
Yeah.
You know, and they did better in those days.
They did better in those days.
They did fairly well. But there were times where he wasn't fishing, and we didn't have a lot, but Mom knew how to stretch it out, you know? She had that way of stretching it out. But I remember going to school at Southlands and feeling really inadequate. Like, I would hide my lunch because I didn't have anything really in my lunch except a sandwich. Because there might have been a time where, you know, Dad wasn't working and we didn't have enough. And so we would take a sandwich, and that would be the extent of my lunch. And then I'd see the other kids with their abundance, and I would feel really bad, and I just wouldn't show them what was in my lunch, or I wouldn't eat at all. So I never felt very good at Southlands. I never felt, mind you, the kids were nice to me,
yeah.
And I'm sure the teachers were nice to me, but it was me. I didn't feel good there, and I didn't feel equal, and I never felt at home. I just wanted to get away from there and get back to where I felt comfortable. Mm-hmm. So the whole time that I was at school from grade 1 to 3, I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. And I felt really insecure. I wanted to be with my mom, you know. And I got up to grade 7. I don't know how I got there, because I, you know, really honestly don't remember being very academically inclined. I hated school from the time I got there until the time I left. And I got up to Point Grey for half a year and quit, and I've never looked back. And what I realized as a weaver was all of those things that I felt so bad for, I knew all my people felt bad for. There was just something about going to school that we didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to put my kids through that, so I really encouraged them, and I try to be very interested in what they're doing, and I try to encourage them to graduate and to do the best that they can do. But to this day, I don't regret quitting school, because I feel really successful in what I do. And I feel like that's always what I was searching for. I might be born in the wrong time frame. Sometimes I think that when I'm working by myself and I'm so content, I'm thinking this is what I am and who I am. And I think I'm an old soul planted into this contemporary world to, you know, teach again, to share the old philosophies in a new way, so that we all know how really important all of our histories are. Not just mine and not just yours, but everyone's. And I'm really compassionate about it. I'm really passionate about it, you know, and I don't regret going to school. But what I do now is to take everything that I've learned as a weaver, incorporated into a package, so that we can go back and teach again. And when I sit with the grade fours and I teach them what I do, and I share with them, I share the importance of education, and I give them some of it, and I take some of it for myself, so that there's this ever continuing sharing going on, and not just one way and not just the other, so that the children see that, and that they know that this is their history too. This history that I talk about is Vancouver's history. It's not just Musqueam's. And we should celebrate it in Vancouver. We do not talk about our history here. We only go back 135 or 40 years and celebrate that. When you go to any city in the world and there's ancient histories and cultures, we talk about it, we celebrate it. But here we don't. It's quiet. No one says anything, and I think it has partly to do with land claims. And living in this community, we know what that's about, because we have a situation up the road where, you know, it's been all over the papers, and I think it's important for the children even to understand it, because when my son was in grade, or my daughter was in grade 7, when this first happened, up here where this land, leased lands,
well, the lease problem,
about,
yeah.
The lease mm-hmm. problem, one of the little boys at her school said, she goes to Immaculate Conception when she's in grade 7, and every day they opened a prayer with an opening prayer, and one of the boys said in his prayer he prays that the Indians don't take his land away. So he was being told by his parents about the nasty Indians that lived down the road, and that caused a bad feeling for my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, she said, "Mommy, what's going on?" Because she didn't really know. She wasn't reading the papers or really watching. So I had to explain to her. And I said, nobody's going to take their land away from them. And I said, I find it, you know, I didn't tell her at the time, but I find it so interesting that these people who are up there, and I guess their power is money, feel so powerful that they want to own land they knew was only leased land. And they felt, because we're Native, that they should be able to own it, and never mind us. And they're so reluctant to pay for it. But, you know, I never, I felt that way when we went to school. It was like we were traveling in, and once we got across the highway, we were in another world. One in which we really didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And it happens that way in Musqueam. People here go to school, graduate, and they sort of stay. We don't have a big turnover of people leaving and going to become something somewhere else or traveling to the other side of the world and studying. Mm-hmm. And I get asked that question a lot about why do you think that your people don't go anywhere? Why are they so... I said, well, I think that they're... I mean, it's like me, myself. They like where they are. They like who they are. And they don't have a need to go out and look for something else. So they're very quite content to stay here. And not so interested in moving so fast towards a direction as society does in general with our high-tech motivated lives that we have. I mean, everyone here uses a cell phone and has probably a computer, but they're not willing to jump on board quickly. Mm-hmm. And some of them jump on, and then they jump back off. I mean, I did. I went out and searched the world, looked around, poked my head out, and said, I don't think I'm missing out on much myself, and I come back. And here I am again back, and, you know, somewhat of a traditionalist, but also a realistic person who knows that we live in this contemporary world, and at any moment, President Bush could press the button. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is in our life today, that, you know, you just never know what the next disaster will be. But you make the best of what you have, and you make your life as happy and as positive as you can. And that's the way, I think that's what leaving has given to me. It's given me that foundation. And with that comes a certain peace in your life, that you know who you are, and you know where you come from, and I think I said that earlier. And you know, I've never looked back in our community for school. The schools today, we're still having a little bit of problem at Southlands.
I was going to ask you, is Josh going there?
No, Josh
or
goes
is
to
he
Immaculate.
Going to Immaculate? Uh-huh.
And even there, there's a bit of a, you know, people say, why are you sending him to a Catholic school? Uh-huh. And I say, well, why wouldn't I? I try to teach my kids on a daily basis faith, and that verifies it. Josh knows very well what creation is, what I expect of him in respect to human nature and the spirit, and then that verifies it, and he hears that it's everywhere else, and there's a certain amount of respect there, but in the public schools they don't teach that. Mm-hmm. They try to, but there's no mention of God or the spirit, or, you know, you hurt people's feelings if you pray, and so on.
Yeah.
So forth, and, you know, I want him to understand, I want that to be part of who he is, and later, when he's an adult, if he chooses not to, that will be his choice. Mm-hmm. But I felt that there should be a little foundation there that's connected, and that's why I chose to send him there. Now he's older, he's 10, and he wants to hang out with his buddies. They all go to Southlands.
Mm-hmm.
And he's determined to get there, and I'm determined that he isn't. So,
will you send him to Point Grey when he gets through elementary school?
Well, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how old's your oldest again?
20.
Oh, yes. And did she go through Point Grey?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
And your next one?
She's at Point Grey now.
Oh, she's at Point Grey
yeah.
now. Is she finding it okay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for myself, I think my home life being a little unraveled, and I felt really insecure, and it affected, you know, and unless, of course, I was just one of those souls who was never meant, no matter what happened, to excel in the academics in that way. Mm-hmm. I spent half my time looking out the window daydreaming about how I could get out of this room. And, you know, I'd get the ruler on the table every once in a while. But, and that's how it's been for me in my life. I've never assimilated well. I've never been the one who, you know, goes with the group. I usually, you know, if I'm with the group, I'm on the outside really just watching and observing.
Was your family group a big enough group for you in a sense? You had a large family, and so you were already in a group without...
I was, but I always removed myself. Uh-huh. Yeah, I had a best friend who I went to school with, and she lived across from me, down a ways, across the field, because we didn't have, per se, streets, you know, but she was across from me. And we grew up together, and she was mostly an only child. She had an older sister who was never around. But her and I grew up together, so that was my solace. I mean, I'd come home from school, change my clothes, and run across the field. And we'd play Barbies all night. And then every weekend, I stayed with her and her mother. Oh. And her mother was old. Her mother was quite elderly, but she adopted her.
Oh, I see.
And so she would phone every Friday, Helen, can Debbie stay for the week? Of course she can. So off I would go. So my mom would be happy to get rid of one of us. And I actually now think now, you know, it's not a detriment to my mother, but just that, you know, Mabel was like a second mother to me. Mm-hmm. And I spent most of my time there where everybody else was squabbling at home. You know, and when I did go home and there were things going on, I used to really feel for everybody. Mm-hmm. I remember my twin brothers teasing my brother close to me so bad when my mom had to step out and my dad. And I would be just upset, you know, that my brothers were doing this. And then my sisters were arguing or whoever. I always was the one that tried to stay out of it, because I just didn't like it. You know, and I was not a teaser. I wasn't the kind of person who liked to tease. And I really do that with my children. Like, I've never played or teased with them so that it's hurtful. Mm-hmm. And I try and teach them that, but of course they're kids, and when they get together, they do it.
Sure.
And my sister once asked me that, why do you think you're like that? And I said, I have absolutely no idea. I just know that it was a certain insight that I had, that I didn't want other people to be hurt. And I was certainly not going to hurt them. And I saw that as very hurtful teasing.
Yeah.
And I've seen it affected your personality. And it got worse, and so your self-esteem went down, and then other things happened, and maybe your friends did the same thing, and then it just escalates. And so you get older in your life, you become more and more unhappy.
Teasing has escalated into bullying in the schools these days too, so mm-hmm. you're right to stop it where it is.
Yeah, you try to
anyway. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Now, where are you in this family of 10?
In the middle.
Right smack in the middle. Yeah. And who's the oldest?
Wendy.
Oh, Wendy.
Then we have the twin brothers.
And they're next?
Yeah.
Okay. I just got to jot this down. When I'm a visual person, I have to see it. Brian, and Brent, whichever mm-hmm. way around you say that. Who's mm-hmm. next?
Gail. Yeah, she's the one that's running for the Liberals.
Running for the Liberals, yes. She's going to try to unseat Jenny Kwan, right?
Rick.
Who?
Rick,
don't know him. No.
Myself.
Deborah.
And then Cindy.
Cindy, I've met her.
Robin.
Now that's with a Y, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jonna. Mm-hmm. And Wayne.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Your mom had a handful.
She did.
That's quite a lot. And is everybody still living in Musqueam?
We're all in a few blocks of each other.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you had been out in the world and were back again, and I think you mentioned living up at where?
Alert Bay.
Is that where you had your family, or?
Oh, no. I just lived there with my first mate. For 8 years, yeah.
8 years, oh yeah.
Well, we stayed there for five, mm-hmm. and then maybe six, I mean. Mm-hmm. And then we came back to Vancouver for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and I had my daughter, mm-hmm. my oldest daughter, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where else have you lived then?
No, mostly just in Alert Bay and Campbell River, and then Campbell back here again.
So yeah. around the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are going to step forth and go to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
That should be interesting. How long are you going to stay? How long is it?
You're going to keep 10 days. Yeah. I'm not that I'm being dragged there reluctantly.
I dare say.
I don't really want to go because I'm not a traveler.
Uh-huh.
And
are you going to be alone as you go there, or is there somebody
else?
No,
I'm going with another person who's doing some work with
me. That you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just as happy to go alone, though. I don't have to have somebody with me.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
I'm not that kind of person. I mean, I'm just as happy to go anywhere. I went to Ottawa last year alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think it's better because then you'd have to argue with anybody about what you want to do.
Yeah.
If I feel like going to a movie, I go. If I want to go out for dinner, I go. I don't worry about going with someone.
Yeah.
So, I'm going because they really want me to go. And they're paying my way, and they're paying for my expenses.
So what's the name of this conference again?
I don't even know.
Oh, you don't?
No. She's got it all taken care of, and I'm just going along.
And so you're going to talk about your weaving?
Well,
is it to do with weaving, or...?
It's about both.
Or to
it's
do
about,
with culture. And,
it's about know. Technical, the technical, where we are technically as Indian people.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And so it's tradition to
why would it be in Paris?
I don't know. Why not?
I don't know.
They're hosting it. So
they're hosting it.
It's something they're interested in, and they don't know any First Nations people, so they want to meet some.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the token Indian to go.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Well, make the most of it. It's a very interesting city.
You've been?
Yes. And, would I go again? Yeah, well, I think I would.
Mm.
I've been twice. And on tours where I was, go here, go there, and so on. And maybe another time I would go and say, forget the tour and just blunder along by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Going back and seeing stuff that I'd sort of taken note of and avoiding other stuff
mm-hmm.
that others thought it was important to see, which
it wasn't.
It wasn't to me.
Yeah.
So that's what I would consider. Now, is there anything else you'd like to tell me about, or do you think we've covered what you would like
I
to see
just,
told of your, of your story.
Just the fact that, I think what happened was, I don't think I know, what happened was, as the first year after I finished working, or learning, the first year course, it sort of unfolded that my other sister, Robin, who's 4 years younger than me, and I began working together.
Mm-hmm.
She became a single mother about 2 years after, and I already was.
Mm-hmm.
And, or was I at the time? And it seemed that we were sort of put into this journey together because we started to, we got propositioned by the museum in Ottawa to do a piece in which now we're doing commercial blankets, by the way. And those blankets are made by big machines, and we design them.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we're doing now, is a more commercial venue. And Robin and I have sort of walked this together, and it's been interesting because when we were younger, I don't really remember her a lot. Maybe, when my dad died, I was 11, and by the time I was 14, 15, I went to school up in Abbotsford by myself, staying with a family who rented rooms out as well, and I went to school up there just for a little while. When I came back, I got my own place. I was 17.
Mm.
So I didn't really live at home a lot since I was 15.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 18, I was gone again, and I was living up north.
Mm.
So I was never around my younger siblings very much, and this gave Rob and I the chance to, so we sort of gotten to know each other again and become, you know, closer as sisters, but also as friends. Mm-hmm. And so everything we do, we respectively do together, and we share all of our funds, we share all of our work. In fact, when we did this piece I was showing you earlier of the Smithsonian, we did it together. And we did our first one for the museum in Ottawa, which was made out of mountain goat. Mm-hmm. It wasn't made out of sheep wool. And we decided that we would attempt, because we'd made things individually, and we would attempt to make this piece together. It was 10 feet long. We didn't know if the women back years ago did this work together where they did it individually. So to really do a piece together, you have to really be confident with one another, mm-hmm. because you have different tensions, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, so different habits. But we had worked together so long, we were confident we could do it, so we did it. Mm-hmm. We took turns. There's times where you can work together and meet in the middle, or, you know, there's times where you go back and forth and work for half an hour.
Yeah,
the next
because of all those sections that,
On that one, yes, but not on the one in Ottawa. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, like, in the first section, we would take turns, like a couple of hours here, a couple of hours there. Mm-hmm. And then some of us, you know, and then on this section you could start on one, both could start and come and meet in the middle. Mm-hmm. But that's very tricky because of the tension. I mean, you really have to be confident. And we've done that. Mm-hmm. And so every commission that we get now, mostly we do together. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, someone orders one that's relatively small, like 2 or 3 feet, 2 feet by 2 feet, mm-hmm. we'll do individually. But the bigger blankets, we share everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And we've managed to support our little families, you know, as best we can. It's really the only income we have. Sometimes we don't have a commission, mm-hmm. you know, but then we have our school programming. That's not a big money maker either, but it will be. I think all of these things.
Does Robin go teaching too?
She comes with me now.
Oh, she comes with.
She never used to. Mm-hmm. But what's happened with that is one of my dreams has come true with that, is that it's become a school program that enables the teachers to have a little bit of an idea of the educational process amongst our people for mm-hmm. contact, and how important the environment is. We take the kids on a creek walk, talk to them about the environment and about saving the environment and how important it is. And, you know, kids these days are already pretty aware. So the school program is building. Where there was only one or two of us now, we've hired myself and the museum have partnered up, and we've added to it, and so we have two other women, which is my sister and Vivian Campbell. We call them cultural teachers because everything that they know and their knowledge is can only be taught by them. It can't be right. taught by someone else unless they take the course from us. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where we're at with that.
Are you targeting classes like the inner city schools that have you know, a lot of Native kids?
No, we're not targeting anybody. We're targeting
just going wherever you're invited.
We're targeting grade fours, and it doesn't matter who they are, what they are. We work with the grade four school programming that's already established in the city with the museum, and then we partner up with them. Mm-hmm.